Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Attention all theater lovers, this Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
Raindrops on roses and whiskers on kittens, bright copper kettles and warm woolen mittens, brown paper packages tied up with strings. These are a few of my favorite things.
Happy Throwback Thursday, everybody.
Hey, everybody. It's Kevin David Thomas and Rob W. Schneider.
Oh, I like. Thank you for saying my middle initial.
I decided to say your name for you today because I'm so excited to see you because I haven't seen you in 2 weeks.
That's true. We had our Tonys. We had our Tony thing. 2 weeks of fun Tony things. And thank you to everybody, by the way, who reached out and told us how much you enjoyed our Tonys broadcasts. We appreciate
that. We had a lot of
fun.
Yeah, we had a lot of fun with Brian.
We did have a lot of fun with Brian. And he is so enthusiastic about the Tonys.
Thank goodness he saw so many shows because God knows I didn't.
But I thought you were really good in the fall and then I was really good in the spring. So I think we found a nice balance.
Our powers combined.
And luckily Brian saw all of them.
Exactly.
So I think we should talk about the broadcast that just happened.
You're the first person I talk to because I was all by myself. This is the first time I've watched the Tony Awards, just Sutton and I at home by ourselves, not at a party, nobody talking. It was a very quiet evening, but this is the first time I've had an opportunity to actually talk about what happened.
Did you not enjoy our sweat box last year?
I did lose some weight, so that was nice.
would you like to tell our listeners about my Tony party that you came to last year?
You may have heard, friends, that last year we were at Rob's apartment watching, and it was a warm, warm, hot summer day. Just hot. And he's on a 5-floor walk-up, and it was just – it's a great apartment, lovely apartment. And we had the air conditioning unit going, thinking that it was going. We kept getting hotter and hotter as the evening went on, and it wasn't because of the performances. And so we finally looked over at the air conditioning and noticed that it was actually not on. It was on fan. And we were drenched. We were just soaking in sweat. And we realized, and then we flipped a little switch and boy, it cooled right down, didn't it, at about 11:20. So yeah, it was a different Tony viewing night.
Drenched. We were literally wringing our clothes out with sweat. But I looked fabulous.
Yes, you did. You always do, Rob.
Well, thank you. I felt like I lost a lot of water weight that night. So I felt really good and I felt less puffy, which was really important for me. So thank you very much. I can now fit into my strap list.
That's a nice Grammys. Vision. We'll post that later.
Nobody should see that. What in God's name has anyone done in their world to see that picture? Mm-hmm. Send it to Trump. So let's talk about, though, the 72nd Annual Tony Awards hosted by Josh Groban and Sarah Bareilles. So first of all, how did you think they did as hosts?
You know, I thought they did a good job. I thought, you know, it's especially after last year. I mean, it's not like, you know, we had a far to go. I'll remind everyone it was Kevin Spacey.
You didn't like his impressions of like dead silent film stars that nobody fucking knew who he was doing.
I mean, that was just weird. I enjoyed the songs. I was nice. One of our favorite things wrote the songs for them. Shayna Taub. She was, she wrote. I noticed that she helped, write the songs.
The opening song, right?
Yeah.
Or all of them.
I thought that was. I think the opening and the one near the end.
Very cool.
I really enjoyed it. I thought they were fun when they were singing. I thought they were fun. They didn't take themselves too seriously. I thought that was really fun. I miss having like one big, oozing of charisma headliner, but it's okay to have different years. And I think it's really cool that they're experimenting and going a different route. So I applaud them and what they did.
Me too. I think they did really, really lovely work. And I so applaud that this year the focus was on the ceremony and the community as opposed to look at me, which I felt last year was look at me, look at me.
a little too much look at me, look at me. Yes.
Like people bending over backwards to make Kevin Spacey happy, who I heard was quite a diva last year.
I've heard that too.
So apparently his opening number, do you remember his opening number where I think he like started off, he was Evan Hansen, and then like he did all these things. And okay, so anyway, so he demanded that to keep it as a surprise and as secretive as possible, that nobody see it, including a lot of the tech team. So when they came to rehearse it and like things weren't going right, he had like a hissy fit, yelling and screaming and throwing things, going, "Why is nothing working? Why is nothing working?" It's like, because you never showed this to anybody before.
Yeah. So
maybe that's why it's not working.
Strange.
I thought they did a nice job. I don't know if they need to come back again, but
it was good. Was fine.
And I really liked the hashtag Tony Dreaming.
Loved that.
I really appreciated that, and I just liked how they really got out of the way a majority of the time.
Agreed.
So, God bless them.
They kept it moving, and they kept the spirit light. And yes. I think that's really all you really want from someone that's hosting the Tony Awards, is just having a good time. And everyone began loving this as a kid, usually. Mm-hmm. And so I think anytime you harken back to those days, it's nostalgic, but it's also very sentimental and sweet. But it wasn't forced, and I appreciated that as well. Although I must say, I'm not snarky, but when the lights went down and they introduced the high school kids, I blurted out to Sutton, I was like, "Oh, here comes Season of the Love." Wouldn't you know it?
It was.
Dune, 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 dune. And then it was like, what's this feeling behind my eye? What are these tears coming out? Why am I crying? I'm supposed to be making fun of this, but I can't because it's so beautiful.
I cried like a baby. I cried absolute baby.
It was just beautiful.
That was great. Yeah. And I'm so happy that the teacher from Stoneman Douglas got it this year.
Yes.
I hate to say this. I thought, I was like, well, this is nice. They're giving her the award because the, drama community, blah, blah, blah. But to know that she had shielded and guarded her students.
Yeah.
For that really, really got me.
Yeah.
I'd never even thought of that aspect of it, that just really, really got me. I was also so touched by some of the acceptance speeches. Lindsay Mendez's, I thought, was stunning when they said, you have to change your last name to have a career.
Yes.
It was good. I thought the ceremony really told a younger generation that's watching, embrace your individuality, embrace who you are. Don't try to conform. Don't try to change.
Yes.
And I think that was also represented a lot in a lot of the wins for the band's visit.
Indeed.
Some of those wins, totally appropriate. One of those wins, I'm not very happy with, but I'll get over it.
Which one?
I am still confused as how Ethan Slater lost to Tony Shalhoub.
I think Ethan Slater, I agree with you.
Big time. And I think even Tony Shalhoub is confused on how Ethan Slater lost to him. Once again, Ethan Slater's performance in SpongeBob is one of the most incredible performances I've ever seen, period. And this is, how am I going to say this in a nice way? I think Tony Shalhoub is an incredibly talented film and television actor. I think his work on Monk was incredible. I think his work in The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel is fantastic. I have never seen him in a live performance where I was blown away.
Mm.
I just haven't been. So maybe I haven't seen the right show, but I think I've seen him in like five or six shows now. I've never seen one where I was totally blown away with him. I think he's a marvelous film and television actor. I think he's so inventive and so incredible. But I'm also like, I'm going to say
the part isn't that either. The part is like a under the radar. He doesn't even do much in it.
He talks his way through one song towards the end, and he doesn't really. Okay, I'm so sorry. I could be totally wrong. And because people love this show, people just love the band's visit, and they are.
I am one of them.
As seen by the countless Tony Awards it received. I'm going to be honest with you. I think that it was the most deserving show this year to get those awards. I think they were absolutely right. But I'm also like, look at your competition. That's all I'm going to say. And the last thing I'm going to say is this. I am really getting sick and tired of people getting awards because they've shown up.
Yes. I will say, though, that, you know, I one of the snarkier moments of the whole telecast, which makes me so mad at the powers that be, you know, you don't see David Yazbek winning his Tony for Best Composer, but you are going to show Tina Fey lose because they thought she was going to win. So they included that category in the telecast. And that kind of stuff really gets under my skin, because it's, are we going to honor the category? Are we going to honor, like, the mega star that you want to, you know, show? And I get it. It's for ratings. And we have to have that because that's how people, you know, watch the show, because they, but I think there's a fine line, and I think they really lost on that regard. And I really resented that.
Me too. I don't understand why they're not showing these. Here's the thing. I think Les Moonves, who's the president of CBS still, I think he is still the president of CBS. He said, somebody asked him once, he said, why do you still do the Tony Awards? And he said, listen, he goes, the Tony Awards is and will always be a money loser for CBS. He goes, but sometimes there's things that's more important than money.
Oh, wow.
And the acknowledgement of the fact that, like, listen, we know that nobody's watching this except a very small demographic. Then my feeling is then give the small demographic what they want. The fact that the designers aren't on there, you know, the fact that, you know, David Yazbek, who wrote Best Score, got like maybe 10 seconds to you know, in the actual broadcast, they showed like 10 seconds of his acceptance speech. Also,
Cheetah and Angela Weber.
I was just going to say, these two titans of the entertainment industry, you can't give them time to. And I'm so sorry that the one thing I had a little bit of an issue with was that weird, like, Cheetah, Andrew Lloyd Webber mashup
montage, where
the montage,
like, why can't we you know, in previous years you would have seen, you know, famous stars come out and give a sing medleys about each one of their stuff, you know, showcasing the work that has happened in the previous years, or, you know, I mean, in other years you would see something like that. It's a great opportunity to have performances, but instead we get this weird mashup of the two of them, not even two separate mashups.
Well, I was watching with some younger people, and they were like, they're like, I didn't know Andrew Lloyd Webber worked on West Side Story. And it was like,
oh my God.
But, you know, but also, it's like, that's okay. It's like, he didn't, but I totally understand
why you would think that.
Why
you
might think that.
All those shows they did together,
And Gina Rivera was a brilliant.
Ava Perone.
Although, I'd pay to see that.
Hell yeah.
I'd actually like to see her Mr. Mistopheles. I bet you she'd be genius.
Gus the theater cat. Yeah. I thought that the solo numbers fared better than the medleys this year, as far as performances that happened.
So, meaning
Omar Sharif, I thought was really nice, and
genius.
She's just so special. But I thought, like, the Frozen medley, I don't think they landed as well for me as watching, like, a full 4-minute song. I just, they seem to do better in my taste this year.
Yeah.
But I love those. I do love seeing the live performances, though. Once on this Island, love that. Oh, my gosh.
I am so happy Once on this Island won.
Wow.
That made me so happy. I cannot even tell you. I was convinced it was going to be My Fair Lady.
Oh, and I think there were a lot of, I would have loved to know all the people that, you know, their busted poll, you know, thinking they got all the correct categories, because it was a wild year. I mean, a lot of upsets this year. You don't usually get this many upsets.
No, speaking of sports. No, and Best Supporting Actress, I think everybody thought it was going to be Denise Gu for Angels in America, and it went to Laurie Metcalf, who I got to see, when we did our Tony's broadcast, I had not seen Three Tall Women yet. And I saw it after we did our broadcast. It was one of the best theatrical experiences I've ever had.
Wow.
Glenda Jackson's performance is incredible. She deserves the Tony Award, not because she's shown up and because of her advanced age. It is the best performance on Broadway this season. And Laurie Metcalf was right there behind her. Mm. And the fact that Laurie was actually able to win the award this year made me, it was a surprise, but very a happy surprise.
I like that. Yeah.
Yeah. And I then agree. My only thing is, once again, I thought Ethan Slater should have won for SpongeBob, and Tony Shalhoub is a brilliant, genius actor, but I think that this year the Tonys got that wrong.
It was clear that it was a band's visit sweep all the way. I mean, except for the costumes. I mean, it really was like a full-on sweep. I mean, as soon as that Ariel Stetchel won, I thought, okay, all right, this is how it's going to be. Wow.
His speech was lovely.
Beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. Subtly political. There was just subtle politics, except for obviously De Niro. But everything else was really classy and subtle, and I appreciated that.
I appreciate classy and subtle. Yeah, and no, and but I do think that the band's visit deserved every single award it won. Agreed. I just feel.
Except maybe Ethan Slater.
Ethan Slater should have won for SpongeBob, but that's okay. Good for you, Tony Shalhoub. You know what that makes me happy, though, about Tony Shalhoub winning? It means if he can be in a musical, I can be in a musical.
Your Man in Chair, Rob, is the stuff of legends.
My Man in Chair was pretty legendary.
Yeah?
Pretty legendary. I'm not going to, you know, be humble. I'm gonna be as arrogant as can be. And let that out there. No, but the guy who's playing my Man in Chair is even more brilliant than me, if that's possible.
And we should say that Rob... We should say that Rob just put up a Drowsy Chaperone out in Cape Cod, Massachusetts. And then what's the theater called? I forget.
The theater is a really cool theater. The theater is called Priscilla Beach Theater. It's one of those converted barn theaters that dot the lines of the northeastern region. It was built in 1937 and went through a major renovation and new change of ownership in 2015. And if you're in, it's in... It's in Plymouth Beach next to Plymouth Rock. The theater is called Priscilla Beach Theater. It's a 5-minute walk from the beach, so the fact that I was able to do any work at all is amazing because I just want to be on the beach all day.
I thought you looked a little tan.
Well, thank you. It's the lighting. Mm-hmm. But it's really a fantastic, wonderful facility, and if you guys get the chance to ever get out this way, go see a show there. I'm going to warn you, though, their subscriber base is very loyal, and every year when they announce the new season, it sells out. So that's Drowsy great. Was sold out even way before we even got into rehearsals on it, which is great. So that's that. And then tomorrow I'm about to start auditions for Wonderful Town, which is actually going to be in West Falmouth, Massachusetts, on Cape Cod, at a place called College Light Opera Company.
Excellent.
In which one of our future guests, John Lee Beatty, set designer, got his start working there.
Hey,
full circle. Cool. Full circle. And interestingly enough, at this one, the guy who's directing Guys and Dolls next is one of our former guests, Ron Fassler.
Who wrote Up in the Cheap Seats.
Ron, who wrote the incredible book Up in the Cheap Seats, which is available, I believe, on Amazon and Kindle. And if you pay Ron a couple of bucks, he actually comes to your house and reads it for you. Ron is...
Thank you.
Dedicated. He's a dedicated author. I live with him now in Plymouth, so maybe he'll come and read for me.
That's nice.
He still charged me a travel fee, which I don't understand.
Well, that's odd. That's too bad.
You're 2 feet away, so why don't I get a travel fee? Huh. But it's worth it. It's worth it.
It's an alarm to wake up to in the morning. Speaking of favorite things.
Yeah, so we weren't, but good attempt at the segue.
Well, Ron was. Ron was a favorite
thing. Oh, you're right. No, Ron was a full-on guest.
Oh, right. That's right.
Ron was actually a full-on guest. That's it. Did you just drop your mic?
Nope. It felt like I did, though, in my heart.
I just thought because Kevin and I are doing this by Skype, and so the camera for some reason on my end is sort of cutting you out because I have another window open, and so you kind of look like Phantom because all I see is like half your face. Oh, now I see the full face. No, go back to what you were doing before. Now I see nothing. That's okay. But I thought I saw the microphone drop, and I got very, very nervous.
You were worried for me.
I was worried for you. I was like, who am I going to get to replace him? Then I was going to call the paramedics.
I don't even want to know the list. Yeah, I don't even want to know the list of people you have.
Here, I'll go over it with you right now. Tony Shalhoub. I think he's going to be genius on podcasting.
Oh, my God.
He's going to be great. Nobody will get to see that fierce mustache, though.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on Essie Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
Okay, Kevin, speaking of favorite things, like you were saying, you must have a favorite thing for us.
I think I do. We've actually discussed this favorite thing many times. It is a name that comes up all the time. And I decided to have, in the spirit of teachers and how special they are in this world, I thought I would feature one of the most well-known teachers that ever existed for musical theater, which is, who is?
Lemon Engel?
Nope. But he's a great teacher. It's a name that is going to be forgotten, unfortunately. But he did write three books about this art form that we call musical theater. He was married to the late great Nancy Walker.
We were just talking about him, and his name is David Craig.
Yes, David Craig. Good job, Rob.
Take it away, Kevin.
So David Craig, who unfortunately left this earth at 75 in 1998, but he began teaching musical theater and creating sort of a technique to interpret musical theater, especially in the audition situation. You have to remember, everybody, you know, now we have four-year schools. You can go to Carnegie Mellon to study musical theater. You can go to Baldwin-Wallace University, where I went to college. You can go to all these places and study all three, you know, dancing, acting, singing. That is normal now. But even 30 years ago, if you listen to some of our interviews, some of the older folks that have been around that maybe came to New York in the 70s and 60s even, there was no musical theater course. You know, you took some dance and you took some acting, but putting it all together was a relatively new thing. We take that for granted now. But so one of the first people to set up a technique specifically for musical theater was David Craig. He started teaching in 1948. He was always a teacher, sort of a career teacher. He did some music arranging on a couple shows on Broadway of The Icing in 1952, but mostly he was known for being a teacher. If any of you have listened to our interviews, you've definitely heard his name come up with some of the older legends who all studied with him. He taught privately and he taught group classes. And I would like to feature specifically one of his first books about performing or singing. It's called On Singing on Stage by David Craig. You can still get it on Amazon. It's not too expensive. It is a fantastic book. What I like about it, and Rob and I are both teachers, as you all know, and I'm always constantly looking for new ways that I can communicate to my students and help them and figure out ways to break down what it is to sing a song and audition a song and be as truthful as possible. And in this book, he literally breaks every single moment down from the introduction to the song, the vamp, where you're supposed to focus, what do you do with your hands, all of these things that our students are always talking about. And I'm going to implement a lot of these techniques into my own personal technique, how I teach. It's literally, he says, you know, you've got to find the facts of the song. You write a sentence. This is a story about blah, blah, blah. Then the next step is you write the subtext for the song. All part of a technique. This is not how you're supposed to perform it, but it's a way to get the song in the actor's body and so that they're not just stiff staring at a point. And every single thing that Rob and I talk about, David pretty much invented. I mean, every single little detail from, speaking your truths and, planning the focus on the dot on the wall, except that can't live there because nobody stares at somebody that long when they're singing, creating a third person to talk to, all of that. And I've just been talking for like 3 minutes, but I cannot speak enough of how ahead of its time this book is, because you have to imagine, he was creating this from nothing. I mean, nobody knew really how singing on pitch and communicating ideas, how to teach that to somebody, because actors, they act in the moment. You have a line, the line stops, and that's it. But when you're singing, you have to hold a syllable and make that interesting. And it's keeping that, so young people out there, if you're students of musical theater, I highly recommend this book by David Craig, On Singing on Stage, because it will answer a lot of questions that sometimes are a little ambiguous. At least they answered questions for me, and I'm 37 years old and been doing this since I was 18, and it still helped me figure out, what this crazy thing is that we're doing on stage.
That's incredible. Yeah. That's really, really fantastic.
So he was a – yeah.
Do you know the names of the other books?
Yeah, the other one is called On Performing.
On Performing.
So there's sort of, it sort of goes hand in hand. This one, On Singing on Stage, is sort of a technical, it breaks every single moment down of the audition. And then On Performing is more about building a character and performing on stage. You know, and then the other one is called a Performer Prepares, kind of like an actor prepares, but a performer prepares.
I also read his book On Nancy Walker, which was about the successes.
How dare you? How dare you? 41 years married, though. 41 years sick. Until she passed away. They were married. So that's sweet. She, you guys would know her because she was the original I Can Cook To, and On the Town. She was, you know, she was did many, many things and many TV shows and all of that. But the young singers might think, oh, I Can Cook Too. That's, I love Nancy Walker in that.
And for my television friends, Nancy Walker is known for pretty much three things, I think. One, she was the Bounty commercial lady.
Yep.
Okay. She was Rhoda's mom on Rhoda. And my personal favorite, Aunt Angela in The Golden Girls.
Golden Girls,
she was Sophia's sister who comes to visit.
She was Sophia's sister. That's right.
And B. Arthur, for some reason, said, and I don't know why, she's like, I hated those episodes.
Huh.
I have no idea why. Maybe she just did not like Nancy Walker. In addition to David Craig's books, he made a video series. That's like a 6-part video series where he actually goes through singing technique with students. And they're very expensive.
Huh.
They're like, I think they're only on I could be totally wrong, but I think they're only on VHS. I haven't found them on YouTube anywhere, but like,
that would make sense.
If you try to get them on Amazon, they're like $60 each. There's like six in the series, so they're pricey. But I watched one of them once, totally worth it.
All right. I'll have to be on the lookout for that because I think it'd be great to see him in action, to see just exactly how he interacts with students and sort of translates what's on the page into real time action. You know, it's because he seemed like quite a special teacher. Every single person we've talked to has never said a single negative thing about him, just how much help and how much inspiration he brought to their career.
And I think he was the one who helped get Alexis Smith Follies.
Okay.
I think he had worked with her on that. A really, really incredible guy. And like you said, you know, what's so interesting is he codified so much of this technique. And
that's right.
And that is sort of the basis for so many musical theater teaching programs. So he's still alive. His spirit is still alive for us.
Indeed. Indeed. Good. So what do you have for me today, Roberto?
Well, I have... You know what? Before I go into this, sorry, I just realized I want to bring up another point. You know what? Because we haven't seen each other in 2 weeks, you know what we forgot to mention really quickly?
What?
That we lost Russell Knipe.
Oh, yeah.
Who we were trying to get for this show.
I know. I was trying to do my detective work to get to him, and I tried to find his son on Facebook, and oh, man, because you know I'm such a fan of Russell Knipe. I've always been. And I was – it's always a bummer when a real legend like that leaves this earth. He was
one of your favorite things at one point.
He was. Yeah.
Yeah. Love so Russell. Go back Love and listen to that. Yeah, so I'm so sorry. We forgot to mention that at the beginning, so I just wanted to make sure that got mentioned. So
I'm glad you did.
Goodbye, Russell. Thank you for all the great things you've given us.
Yes, indeed.
My favorite thing this week is a YouTube video.
Ooh.
And I'm kind of obsessed with it, and I need to pass on my love for everybody else.
Okay.
So this is it was a special made in 1981.
Okay.
And it's a dance special.
Sorry, that's me. That's my jaw on the floor because I did not see that one coming.
It's a dance special. I know. You think to yourself, Rob is such a brilliant dancer. What else could he learn?
I do love tourgetes, Rob. I do love you tourgeté.
And a tourgeté, again, is that where I spin and jump?
Yes, that is exactly right. And land on one foot, I believe.
That I cannot do. It will be one knee that will get shattered. And you'll have to take me.
You'll send a Bitmoji of you doing that.
Please, Bitmoji, if you're listening, please.
Rob doing tourgeté, please.
I need a tourgeté. No,
what do I type in my YouTube search thing?
You would type in American Dance Machine.
Oh.
A Celebration of Broadway Dance, 1981. So once again, guys, this is the American Dance Machine, A Celebration of Broadway Dance, 1981.
Oh, Rob, this is good.
So for those of us who are unaware, the American Dance Machine was a dance group created by an acclaimed Broadway dancer named Lee Theodore. She was the original Anybody's in West Side Story, and then she had done choreography throughout the rest of her life. Now, this I'm gonna just to be honest with you, I'll put this up front. She passed away at age 54. She died in 1987 at age 54. She was very young when she died. So who knows what else she could have accomplished. But the big thing that she left us with was a dance group called the American Dance Machine. Lee Theodore believed that Broadway choreography needed to have the same level of importance as ballet. The way that we reintroduce audiences to famous ballet dance pieces. Her feeling was, she goes, unlike a ballet, in which the dance stays alive through the members of the company and can consistently be recreated and is always part of seasons. She said, we don't have that for Broadway shows, because once the Broadway show closes, it goes away. And we're going to lose all of these great, fantastic dances. So she and a bunch of dancers would come together and recreate the original choreography from a number of famous dances, and even not so famous dances, from Broadway musicals of yesteryear. And so what we see in this one is, from 1981, it's a hour-long celebration of dance. And these are the choreographers. They perform works by Danny Daniels, Agnes DeMille, Carol Haney, Michael Kidd, Joe Layden, Donald Sadler, Buddy Schwab, and Robert Tucker, and Anna White. And the shows that they do are No No Nanette,
your favorite.
My favorite. Shenandoah, Carousel, George M., The Boyfriend, Half a Sixpence, Finian's Rainbow, Walkin' Happy, and this I think is really cool. Carol Haney, the great Carol Haney, choreographed a dance piece called Satin Doll, and they recreate that as well. So you get to see the original choreography, and some of the dancers that are featured, we know them, Janet Elber, Leroy Reams, John Jones, and Wayne Cilento are the four featured dancers, and then the rest of the American Dance Machine fills in for all the other dance pieces. But Theodore's idea was that these pieces should consistently be in front of audiences. And what I'm happy about is that since like the mid-80s going forward, so many musicals have been recorded either in Lincoln Center or through bootlegs. And so luckily, if we want to see what like a dance piece looked like in, you know, Graziella Danielle's Ragtime, we can go to Lincoln Center, we can watch it. So American Dance Machine is still around. It's now called ADM 21, American Dance Machine for the 21st Century.
Oh, I didn't
and they
know that.
Do a lot of the newer dance pieces. Like, for example, they did We Take a Glass Together from Grand Hotel, Our Favorite Son from Will Rogers. So it's still out there. And they also like to recreate a lot of like 50s variety show television dance pieces. So that's good that it's still happening. But in this one, there's a couple of things to watch out for on this one. One, it's brilliant. And Leroy Reams and Janet Elber do a brilliant Charleston from The Boyfriend. And they also do You Can Dance With Any Girl at All from No No Nanette, which is fantastic. It's hosted by Gwen Verdon.
Oh.
And I'm going to warn everybody right now.
Uh-oh.
The transitional dialogue is kind of atrocious.
Is it really?
It's
Can you
kind
give
of
me an example? Can you give me a line reading?
I can't do a Gwen Verdon, but it's things... Right. Hold on, let me see if I can do one of the things she goes. Like, for example, she goes like,
you have to be a triple threat. You have to be a dancer and a singer and an actor. And that's only on Broadway.
Like, it's like, it gets even... But the best is... Like, she walks around at the beginning while they're doing, like, warm-ups, and she'll be like,
extend that arm, Leroy.
Like, it's dance class.
Nice going, Janet.
So she's, I can't do a Gwen Verdon. Robbie Rizal, our frequent guest on this show, can do a brilliant Gwen Verdon. I cannot. But the best is, you have to watch this, because I like, rewound it 12 times, and unfortunately, it's not even a dance piece. She comes out, Gwen Verdon, and it's on stage, and she goes, hi, I'm Gwen Verdon. And then they cut to an audience applauding. I do not think this audience was watching the show. I think it's like stock footage of audiences applauding and that they just randomly like throw in. And so after her first introduction, rewind it a couple of times and let me know.
Okay.
If you're like, I'm really busy this week, Rob, I can't watch all of American Dance Machine, the celebration of Broadway dance from 1981, then I'm going to ask you to go to 41 minutes.
Okay.
And 39 seconds. Once again,
I'm going right 40, now.
41 minutes and 39 seconds. This is a piece from Walkin' Happy, choreographed by Danny Daniels.
What is she wearing? Yeah.
I don't know what she... Oh, yeah. She's like wearing some like red pajama suit.
Yes, with like a black like Lane Stritch hat on. Uh-huh.
I'm looking good for Bobby. So 41:39, it's Danny Daniels. It's Walkin' Happy. They do this incredible choreography with hats, which I'm not, I don't want to give anything away. I just think it's really, really impressive. So if you've got nothing else, if you're like, my time is limited, 41 minutes, 39 seconds, you're going to watch Danny Daniels' brilliant choreography for Walkin' Happy. And then also, if you want some fun, I don't have the time marked here, but there is a great thing from Half a Sixpence. Choreographed by Anna White. Wait for somebody's hat falls off during the number. And okay. I just want you to watch the brilliance of Wayne Cilento because he's the lead dancer in it and he has to pick up the fallen hat. Oh, no, wait a minute. Hold on. Hold on.
We need to get him on the on our show.
I am so stupid.
What? What'd you do?
I, damn it, Rob. You fell for it.
What?
I forgot about this. Okay, so...
What'd I do?
No. Me, not you. In Walking Happy, they're doing this dance, and an actor's straw hat falls off. And Wayne Cilento picks it up and then uses it as, like, improvises using it as a prop. And then when all the people are dancing off, he threw the guy his hat, and the guy caught it.
Oh my gosh.
The audience goes crazy going, oh, my God, that's amazing. And then I totally forgot that that was actually choreographed. Who was it? Tommy Steele, who did... A half a sixpence.
He did. Yeah,
that was
correct.
That was like a bit. It was like that very Vegas-y thing,
right? Because
like,
that's in the poster art is that hat on him.
Yeah, and yep. Sorry. So I got all excited because I'm like I fell for it. So good job, everybody.
Oh,
nice
Rob.
Job. Thanks Tommy Steele and Anna White for making me feel like an idiot. But anyway, like I said, if you got watch that, and also if you get the chance, at least go to 41:39 to watch Danny Daniels' Walkin' Happy, which is kind of incredible. You also see like Popularity from George M., Next to Love and I Like Fightin' Best from Shenandoah, Susan the Silence Ballet from Finian's Rainbow, in which the orchestrations are really bizarre. And like I said, the whole show was produced, even though it's Lee Theodore, the television special was produced and written by James Lipton from Inside the Actor's Studio.
Oh, hello, James, and of Sherry fame.
And of Sherry fame.
And do they sing? Is it just dancing and no singing, or are they singing as well?
There's a little bit of singing, but that's not the primary focus.
Gotcha.
But there is a little bit of singing, yeah.
Wow, fun. I can't wait to check it out.
Yeah, so once again, American Dance Machine, a celebration of Broadway dance from 1981. It's on YouTube. And then if you want, type in ADM21, and you can see some of the more recent clips that they've been doing. And so I hope Fantastic. American Dance Machine keeps doing what they do because it's so important to keep these things preserved and out in front of audiences because
That's
Lee
right.
Theodore was absolutely correct. It does go away.
Yes, it does. And we need to preserve it. That's wonderful. Wonderful.
Yeah, and great on yours, on singing on stage, David Craig.
Yeah, that's right. David Craig, the great teacher.
Lovely. The one and only. All right, so then we will see you all next week.
Bye, everybody.
Raindrops on roses and whiskers on kittens. Bright copper kettles and warm woolen mittens. Brown paper packages tied up with strings. These are a few of my favorite things.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard. So you were being crucified over here, but
yeah.
Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details. of Sunset Boulevard.